Well, good morning once again. It's great to see you all here today on this third Sunday in the season of Lent. And the story that we have to read today is one that will be familiar to many of you. It's the story about Jesus clearing the temple. Do you remember that story? Somebody on the way in said it was overturning the fruit basket Sunday. Maybe so. Last Sunday in worship, I walked through the social hall during the coffee hour, and on one side, the annual book fair, book sale, was going on. We were selling books. And on the other side, there were some Girl Scouts selling Girl Scout cookies. And then there was, in this other corner, a lady with a funny hat on, and she was doling out tickets to the Messiah Sing. And through the room wafted the smell of popcorn, because the adult ed committee was trying to lure in some customers for their upcoming adult education events. And a member of the church came up to me and said, "Hey, Pastor Dave, what's going on in here? I feel like Jesus is about to come in and bring a whip and clear this place out." These are the kind of Bible jokes we make. So we know what it's like to be part of a bustling and busy spiritual community, a place where there's a lot going on, right? Week by week, there's a lot happening here in our church. And so this is a great story for us to hear and consider today, and to come to understand what it means. So listen for God's word to you. It comes to us from the Gospel of John, chapter 2, verses 13 to 22. Listen. "The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those selling the doves, 'Take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace.' His disciples remembered that it was written, 'Zeal for your house will consume me.' The Jews then said to him, 'What sign can you show us for doing this?' Jesus said to them, 'Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up.' The Jews then said, 'This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days?' But he was speaking about the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So this is a story many of us have heard. It shows up in all four of the gospel accounts in the Bible. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, this is a story that happens at the end of the gospel, right? It's after the triumphal entry by Jesus into Jerusalem. It's what we celebrate on Palm Sunday. After that, in the last week of Jesus' life, at the tail end of his public ministry, we hear this story. But here in the Gospel of John, this story is told in chapter 2. It's right at the beginning of his public ministry. He changes water into wine at the wedding of Cana. That's the first sign. And this is the very next story that happens. So he arrives at this temple. And the first thing that we need to remember is this is not the first temple. This is not the original temple, right? It was built by King Solomon, King David's son, in about the year 1000 BCE. That was the original temple to God. So about 3,000 years ago, and it was built. But then it was destroyed by the Babylonians in 587, right? So it was destroyed, and the people were sent into exile by the Babylonians. So from 587 BC, stay with me, we fast forward to the year 20 BCE, which is about 2,038 years ago, something like that. And this is just before the time of Jesus. And King Herod the Great, who is the ruler of this area, decides he's going to rebuild the temple and make it bigger and better than ever. This is the second temple. We remember that this same temple, which is a temple of Jesus' lifetime, was destroyed subsequently in the year 70 AD, or the Common Era, by the Romans. And now there is no more temple in Jerusalem. There's only the remnants that are left. So the temple that King Herod built was not just a single building. It wasn't just like our church sanctuary. It was actually a whole complex. There's a temple complex. It was centered around a place called the Holy of Holies, which we remember was the place where only a certain person, the high priest, could go only on a certain day of the year. It was specially reserved. And then out from there are all sorts of worship spaces and places that people could go for different aspects of their spiritual life. And around the outer edge of this temple complex is what is called the Court of the Gentiles. And the Court of the Gentiles, as you hear the word, is a place where people who are not Jewish could go. They could come into the temple as far as the Court of the Gentiles, but not further in. And this is the part of the temple where our story today takes place. So, no, let's not get it wrong. They weren't selling sheep and cattle like inside the Holy of Holies. They weren't up talking to the choir about buying turtle doves or anything like that. This was on the outer edges. That's where the money changers had set up their tables. That's where this market was happening. So the money changers in this story are performing an important function. They get a bad rap, and we think about them as the bad guys, but listen, people were coming from all over the Jewish diaspora. The Jewish world had spread out. People lived in the Greco-Roman world, down in North Africa, across the Middle East, and whenever they would travel back to Jerusalem for a festival like this one, for Passover, they would come bringing the currency of their local area, right? And they would come to Jerusalem and want to buy animals to go in and make a ritual sacrifice in the temple. But they had all these different kinds of money. So one of the functions that the money changers had was a foreign exchange agent. You've seen them, right, in airports, changing money. Just bring us the coin you have and we'll change it for local money. Some of those coins we know had the picture of pagan gods on them, or maybe of an emperor. And we remember the story where Jesus asks whose image is on this coin. And what's the answer? Caesar Augustus, the emperor, the Roman emperor. So these people come. One of the functions of the money changers is to foreign exchange. A second function of the money changers in the temple was to act as a bank or a storehouse. If you took a long trip and you've done this and brought a lot of money with you, you don't want to walk around town with it in your pocket, right? You could be mugged. You could lose it. Something could happen. So they were like a local bank. Come into the temple and leave your money with the money changers. They'll hold it. And then they'll give you out a little bit each day as you go. A third function of the money changers in the temple was they would actually make change. They would give you smaller coins to use locally. You don't want to carry around big bills. Again, you can use smaller coins. There are three words that are used for money changers in the Bible, and these three words refer to these three important functions that the money changers played. Okay. So there have been a lot of interpretations as to why Jesus goes in and clears out the temple the way he did, if, as I'm saying, the money changers were performing an important function, and it wasn't in the Holy of Holies, it wasn't desecrating the temple, it was on the outer edges. Some have suggested that this is like a market, this is a critique of the market economy, right? Maybe this is an economic critique. Jesus does not like this kind of commerce going on. Some have said this is a social justice concern, that while some people come in and buy cattle and are able to go and present that at the temple, others can't afford the cattle, so they have to buy a turtle dove. And maybe there's a social aspect here where those of high status and wealth look down on those who only bring a turtle dove to offer. So maybe that's what Jesus is after. Maybe this is a critique of big business and corporations and the way that some of these traders, these money changers, have cornered the market, you know, the temple market, and they've got all the business and they're squeezing out the little guy. Maybe it's something like that. Some have offered that this is an animal rights critique, that Jesus is the original member of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Not its cousin, People for Eating Tasty Animals. That's a different group. So maybe this is a religious critique, this is sort of a temple criticism. He's saying this form of worship in the temple is flawed. It's not bringing about more love for God and love for others. So Jesus has come to disrupt it. Social justice, economic theory, animal rights, abuse of power by religious leaders, all of these are in the mix. And maybe they have a part to play. But I have another theory, another idea that I want to bring to you today. Have you ever been to a restaurant and gotten really bad service? Show of hands. Any of you gotten some really bad service at a restaurant? Anyone ever joined Yelp just to complain about that restaurant? Leave a bad review on there? When Lisa and I lived in Rhode Island, there was a restaurant that we liked to go to. It was a vegetarian restaurant. And this was not just like tofu. This was really good food. It was healthy. It was fresh. It was a fun ambiance. It was a great place to go for a meal on a weekend. But the restaurant had consistently bad service, like terrible. You would walk in the door and have to wait 10 minutes before they even look at you, right? You're just waiting there in the front. And then finally they come over and ask you, what do you want? Well, I'm in your restaurant. What do you think I want? I'd like to sit at a table and eat some food. So then they finally leave you there for a while. They come over, and it's like this big inconvenience to bring you a glass of water, to bring you a menu, to do all of those kinds of things. They had an impressive ability not to make eye contact, you know, just to kind of look away, to look sort of bored, to look as if they're not really glad you're there at all. Have you been to a place like that? Would you want to go back? Eventually, I stopped going back, but it took a while. You know, a place where you feel kind of tolerated, but not really welcome? Jesus walks into the temple in Jerusalem, into the place where everyone is going to worship. But he doesn't walk all the way in to where all the Jewish people are gathered. He's in the outer courts, the court of the Gentiles. And we know the word Gentile means non-Jewish, but in Bible times, there were some people who were not Jewish, they were Gentiles, who heard about Israel's God. They heard about what God had done for Israel and for God's people. They knew about the Exodus story. They saw these people who had religious observances. They were impressed by this. They were drawn to this. They wanted to learn more. Some of these people attached themselves to local synagogues and essentially lived like Jews, even though they were Gentiles. So maybe they were pagans or Greeks or Romans or whatever, but they had come to fear and trust the God of Israel. There's a term in the New Testament, it's called God-fearers. They'd come to trust God, the God of Israel. So these God-fearers, these Gentiles, would come also to Jerusalem to observe the Passover feast, just like their Jewish brethren. But when they got there, the only part of the temple they were allowed to go into was the court of Gentiles, that outer court. It was part of the temple, it was a place for them to worship, but it was a little further out. And that was the place where all these money changers and animals had set up shop. That was the place where there was the hustle and bustle of a farmer's market all around them while they tried to pray. It was as if they didn't matter. It was as if they weren't really that welcome. It was as if they weren't worthy, and the people sacrificing animals on the inside were the ones who mattered more to God than them. So this might sound kind of confusing to us, because if you or I had a friend or a neighbor who said, I'm interested in knowing more about this God that I'm hearing so much about, can you tell me anything? You'd probably bring him to church. And you'd say, welcome, come on in. Sign up to serve coffee next week. We're glad that you're here, right? You'd introduce them to friends. You'd tell them when the Bible studies are. You'd tell them to sit right here in the front row and say, Pastor Dave has a word for you today. This is how we would act. But 2,000 years ago, things were different. So if you were a Gentile, non-Jewish person who wanted to worship God and to come close, they could do it, but only on that outer edge of the temple, the court of the Gentiles, and that's where they would worship. So Jesus comes in, and you can imagine this, and he finds these open-hearted, spiritually seeking people. And it's like they're being treated like second-class citizens. They're surrounded by the hustle and bustle of cattle and sheep. There are money changers shouting out, trying to get business coming their way. It's like walking into that cool vegetarian restaurant and getting the sense, they don't want me here. Maybe I don't belong. So Jesus makes a whip out of cords, and he uses it to drive them out of the temple, the sheep and the cattle. He pours out the coins of the money changers. He flips over their tables. He says, stop making my Father's house a marketplace. Stop doing that in here. Notice, Jesus doesn't say stop having a business. He doesn't say stop doing business. Stop changing money. Not what he says. Notice he doesn't say stop doing these sacrifices. Get these animals out of here. I never want to see them again. He doesn't say that. What Jesus says is stop making this house, my Father's house, which is meant to be a house of prayer for all people. It's supposed to be a refuge from the storm. You're treating people as if they don't belong here. You're putting up barriers to their spiritual life. Get it out of here. Jesus goes on to say, if you destroy this temple in 3 days, I will raise it up. People think he's talking about that physical temple that's built around him, but it turns out he's talking about his body and the way that his body will be destroyed on the cross. And on the third day, he will rise again. And only later do his disciples remember what he says. And they come to realize, that he has overcome the grave, overcome the death, overcome any obstacle to people having a life with God. Remember that word atonement means at-one-ment, being made one with God. Jesus is the great reconciler, the great bridge between humankind and the God of love. So Jesus goes all the way to the cross to remove any barrier. In the temple, he whips the air and drives out anything that would stand between people and their God. Now, earlier this morning, let me come to the table. Earlier this morning, I was in a room in the health center of the Terraces of Los Gatos, just next door to the church. And I was there with Pastor Erica and about 30 elders and deacons from our church. And we had gone there because our sister Sue, who many of you know and we've been praying about, is sick and is in the last weeks of her life. We went there to lay hands on her and to anoint her with oil. Because the thing that Sue has, the disease she's dealing with, has caused her to lose her memory. She can't remember. We remember in this story today, two times, it says, later on, the disciples remembered the words of Jesus. And this is a function of the church. The Christian church through ages is we are called to remember the words and actions of Jesus and to tell about them to anyone and everyone who would hear. Sue can't remember. So we went there to remind her. Went there to tell her. The gracious words of Jesus, the promises of God, the one who overcame the grave and death, the one who removed any barrier from us to be with our God. Here at the table today, we do a similar thing. Jesus said, "Do this in remembrance of me." We come to break the bread and drink the cup, and they're reminders to us of Jesus' sacrifice for us. The way he removed any barrier between us and our God. And so as we come, we're called to remember. So I wonder for you, as you think about this story, about why did Jesus clear the temple? There have been a variety of reasons, and you can continue to debate and discuss. But one of them has to be removing anything that would keep someone open-hearted, seeking their God. Jesus went all the way to the cross to remove that possibility of you or me being kept away from the Holy of Holies, from the center of the faith. And here at the table, we also remember God's work. So I wonder, as you prepare your hearts to come today, if there is something in your life that would distract you from coming. If there is something in your life that is a barrier to you coming. If there is something in your life that's a table that needs to be turned over, flipped over, left behind so that you might come, my prayer is that Jesus would come and do that work in you, that you would be open to leaving those things behind and to coming to this table. Come to this table as a welcome guest. Come to this table as one who is invited and expected. Come to this table and remember again that the Lord is good and God's steadfast love endures forever. May it be so for you today. Amen.